Hey, how about some feedback? You doing okay this morning? Happy Father's Day. Like my hat? First of all, it blocks off the lights. That's a good thing because most of the time I can't see you guys. This is what I got for Father's Day. I thought I'd wear it today. So if you're like weirded out by a preacher standing up here wearing a hat, sorry about that. But I wanted to show off my Father's Day present. It looks good on me, doesn't it? Of course, that's better. Last night, my wife was, we were kind of laying around and I was just kind of, you know, just chilling out on the couch and the sun was shining through our window and Heidi, you know, I had a different hat on and she told me to take the hat off and because it kind of stunk. But then when I took it off, she said, oh my gosh, there's a glare coming off your hair. Put it back on. Not real comfortable with that. But anyway, happy Father's Day. We're going to do something later in the service just to acknowledge you and say thank you. When you think of, you know, I mean, I know if you're a believer in this room, you know, hopefully you don't have this image, but when you think of at least the stereotype for a Christian, what goes through your mind? I've kind of seen it recently on the show Everybody Loves Raymond. In that show, if you don't watch it, you won't know what I'm talking about, but there's other shows that do the same thing. They created these two characters. They are Amy's parents in the show. Amy married Robert, the big guy, you know, and her parents in the show are supposed to be people of faith, people who are Christians, and it's very interesting how they stereotype them. They are people who are, you know, kind of rude, kind of stuck in their ways, very traditional. They have certain ways of seeing things and certain ways of doing things. When Robert goes and asks for Amy's hand in marriage, they kind of look at each other with this goofy grin on their face, and then they look back at Robert and they go, no. We wanted a nice guy for our daughter. You're just not it. You know, and sometimes in our minds, there's other shows. I think The Simpsons has a character that is kind of the stereotypical Christian. And it's kind of in vogue to do that. And maybe in your mind, you kind of feel the wrestling of the cookie cutter Christian. The fact that, you know, if I'm really to be a person of faith, I've got to fit in this little mold. And the mold looks, you know, it looks like this. It's people who, you know, wear certain clothes and they shop at certain stores. And, you know, we have our own coffee shops. We have our own bookstores. We have our own little way of doing things. We have our own little code language. And if you don't fit into that little, you know, almost like we come off assembly line, almost like, you know, here's all the junk parts that is this person. And then you go to church and you walk in the doors of church and the first thing they do is they put you through a class and they put you in the situation so that you can be just like us. And we all look alike. We all talk alike. If you're really good, you talk with a little southern accent, you know, because that's the way Christians really do it. And, you know, we're just all this neat little cookie cutter of what it means to be a person of faith. The problem with that is if I read the Bible, nobody in the Bible fits the cookie cutter mold. I mean, it would be cool if we like looked at a Bible and everybody, you know, talked just like this and acted just like this. They don't. And it's kind of interesting is that we're working through the book of Genesis, and I love the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis is primarily a book of stories. There are stories about God. Stories about how God deals with people and how God interacts. But the crazy thing is, if I were writing Genesis, there's probably about 8 or 10 stories I just would have written out because they don't show the good side of us. You know, they don't show people who fit in this nice, neat little cookie cutter mold. They don't show people who do things just a certain way. There's some really whacked out people in the book of Genesis, okay? There are some people who are just bizarre and weird, and some stories that you look at them and you read them and you go, oh my gosh, please don't make that into a movie because it would be rated R. And it's interesting how the Bible doesn't hide these stories like we as believers sometimes do. And so for the next few weeks, instead of kind of just going in order, we're going to do a series that I'm calling whacked out people because I just love the fact that the Bible has some people that don't fit into our cookie cutter mold. And we're going to look at how the book of Genesis deals with some of these stories. We're going to look at one this morning that deals with people who decided to build a stairway to heaven. Next week, we're actually going to look at about 4 stories. And I'll forewarn you now, next week's message will be PG-13. Okay, because the Bible is here, you know. It will deal with these stories, and we're going to try to look at some of these characters and see what happened in their lives and how they were just not nice, neat, little cookie-cutter people to fit in the good old religious mold. But in the midst of that, God used them and did incredible things in them and through them, and it ends up being some pictures of the grace of God that are just incredible. And then the third week, we're going to look at one character who is one of God's kids, But instead of really staying focused and growing and becoming all God wants him to be, he ends up kind of following a different path. And it ends up wreaking havoc in his life and his family's life. We want to show that even though we're whacked out people, even though we have issues, God has a better way for us. And if we'll just kind of find that way and live in that, it'll all be good. And so I just want to wrestle with some of these stories. Stories are great, but we're going to deal with some of these different weird stories before we get into some of the greater characters like Abraham and Joseph down the road as we look at the book of Genesis. And this morning, we're going to be talking about the fact that there was a group of people in this town, this area, this region, that ends up being called Babel, or Babylon is eventually the ultimate name. And they come up with this great idea. Let's build a stairway to heaven. Let's build a bridge. Let's build a tower that gets us there. And, you know, I was kind of thinking about this, and I was thinking about the song Stairway to Heaven, you know, good old... Jimmy Page and Robert Plant up there with the guitar, you know, like, you know, one of the number one songs requested on radio all through the ages, you know, Stairway to Heaven, and, you know, you get the lyrics and the songs. And I pulled out the lyrics and off of Google, and I started looking at the lyrics, and I read the lyrics of Stairway to Heaven. I went, huh? I don't get this. What's it mean? You know, there's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold. She's buying a stairway to heaven. When she gets there, she's sure if the stores are all closed with the words, she can get what she came for. Ooh, 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 ooh. That's the words, you know, the first verse. You go, oh, wow, that's deep. That's interesting. So I thought, I'm going to figure out what this song means. And I started reading all the websites where they said the true meaning of Stairway to Heaven. Here's the ultimate answer. Nobody knows. They were drugged, okay? They were smoking something, wrote the song. They don't even know. They asked, you know, Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, what were you thinking when you wrote this song? We don't know. It just was cool, you know? And, you know, there's all these different lyrics in there, but ultimately the song is this kind of picture of what the Tower of Babel is. What they're basically saying is, you know, we can build our own stairway to the heavens. We can build our own tower. We can find our own way up to the divine, up to God. Somehow we can interact with God. We can build our own path there. And that's what kind of what takes place in this story. If you have a Bible, I'd love for you to turn over to Genesis chapter 11. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your row there, we have Bibles for you. We'd love for you to take one and use it. It's going to be on page 7 of that Bible. And if you don't have a Bible at home that's yours, we'd love for you to keep that as our gift to you. Take that home, read it. One of the things I want to encourage everybody to do is I'm kind of working through the book of Genesis. We are painting in big brush strokes. I really don't want to get bogged down in all the little details. First of all, because my voice cracks and I sound like an adolescent when I do that. But beyond that, I think when you're studying stories, if you get bogged down in the details, sometimes you can miss the big picture. I don't think Genesis ought to be studied that way. But because of that, we don't read and look at everything. This is what I want to encourage you to do. After you go home from, you know, being a Genesis with us, take a Bible and just read the story again. Read the stuff before it and the stuff after it. We're going to be looking at chapter 11, but chapter 10 feeds into chapter 11. In fact, if you're actually studying chapter 10 and chapter 11, chapter 10 is another one of the genealogies. So-and-so begat so-and-so, who begat so-and-so, who begat so-and-so. And it's the genealogies of Noah's sons. We talked about Noah the last 2 weeks. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The three stooges, you know. What was Noah thinking when he named his sons? But their genealogies. And what happens is they're sharing their genealogies. The Hebrew people are asking a couple questions. They are en route. They're going from Egypt, where they've spent the last 400 years, and now God is leading them to the promised land, to God's destination for them. And as they're going, they begin to interact and meet different people groups who live all over the place in their journey. And the question arises, what are these people doing here, and what is with all the different languages? Why don't we all speak the same thing? This story looks to answer that. But it also looks to go beyond that to answer the question for God's people, how do we interact with people who are different from us? How did they get here, but what do we do? How do we interact with people who are different? And this story gives a great image of the way we tend to interact and do things. We tend to build our own stairway to heaven and draw people around us who are just like us. And that's kind of what's going on in Genesis chapter 11. Chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "Now the whole earth had one language and the same words." So there was a point in time where the whole earth, everybody spoke the same language, they had the same words, everybody was just alike, and they loved gathering people around them that were just like them. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Shinar is present day. It's a city or a region that is now in present day Iraq. It will eventually become known as Babylon in the Bible. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. And that's very interesting. As I started looking at this, I said, what's the big deal about brick and this mortar stuff? Well, come to find out what's going on, I told you that Moses wrote Genesis. He's writing it to God's people, who are the Hebrew people, who are leaving Egypt. They have gone through this incredible event where God literally led them out of Egypt, where they'd been in slavery for 400 years. They had seen the pyramids. In fact, there's a real good chance they had built the pyramids. There's a real good chance that that God's people was the slave labor that put the pyramids together. And they used stones. And basically what's going on here is the pyramids that were in Egypt are very similar to the tower that's going to be built here. But instead of using large stones, they used brick. And they burned their own brick and they made their own brick and that kind of stuff. And it says that they used brick. And verse 4 is the key verse of this whole story. He says this. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed all over the face of the whole earth. Let us build a tower. Let us make a city. Let us create a situation that is just all about us. And this is what they did. They gathered all these people that are around that were just like them. We all have the same language. We all talk the same way. You know, it's hard to speak to people who speak different languages. I've taken 3 foreign languages. I took a number of years of Spanish in high school, you know, and I got to where I could kind of talk a little bit. And now it's been a long time, and I know about 8 words. You know, it was really helpful in my journey to have 3.5 years of Spanish, you know, because now I can say, hola, ¿cómo está? And that's about it, you know. And then I took, in college, I took Greek. That's an interesting language because they don't even have the same alphabet, you know. And it took a lot of hard work to study Greek. Well, then I took a year of Hebrew, and Hebrew is just beyond bizarre. It is hard for us to interact with people who are different from us, people who are of different culture. Now, I don't know if you do this. Have you ever seen somebody who's trying to hold a conversation with somebody who speaks a different language? Say you speak English, and that person speaks Spanish. And you're trying to explain, you're giving them directions, and you want to go, you go here and you turn here. What do we always do? We think if we speak louder, they will understand us. All right, here's what you do. You turn left. And they're going, all right, if you go here, and you know, it's like if we speak louder and be more bold, they will get it. No, they won't. They speak a different language. That's kind of how it is. These people gathered people around them that were just like them. They said, let's come together in a city and let's quit scattering. We're afraid of scattering. We don't want to be sent out somewhere. We just want to come together in this city and be comfortable with a bunch of people who are just like us. And when we get here, we're going to build this temple and this tower, and that tower is going to be our stairway to heaven. It's going to be our ladder that gets us where we need to go. And we're going to build this ladder. We're going to build this tower. Are you nervous? Because I am. I'm not good on ladders. Heidi's back there going, please get down, you'll die. Ladders scare me because they shake underneath my weight a lot. And so Leon climbs ladders like crazy. You know, he was standing on top of a ladder, not this one, he's back here, literally on the top rung up there doing stuff. Not me. I'm not going there because I will fall, I will break something, and then I will break something in me too. So, they decided they were going to build their little stairway, their ladder to heaven. Now, the interesting thing about this whole story is that this is one of the things in ancient culture, we know exactly what they're talking about. It's this building that is called a ziggurat. Basically, what they would do is they would come together and they would build a temple. And right next to the temple, they would build a tower that looked very similar to the pyramids in Egypt. And this tower would have steps that went out of the door of the temple, literally would climb up this thing to the top, and at the top of this tower, they would have a room. And in that room, they would set up a table and chairs, they would set up a living room, they would make a little apartment up there. And in that little apartment, they had decided that was where their God would hang out. They'd make him an apartment. He would come stay there. He would come live there. And then whenever they came to worship, like we've come this morning, we've come to sing and stuff, that God would hear, you know, the cries of his people, and he would walk down the steps and just come hang out with them. He'd sit in the back row. Nobody'd notice him. Nobody'd see him there because he'd kind of slip in incognito. And then when the service or the worship time was over, he would crawl back up the steps and go back up to his apartment. That was his life. And what they had really done is the real issue here is that these weird, whacked out people who'd been created in the image of God had decided, instead of following a God we don't quite understand, we're going to make God in our image. And we're going to build a ladder that gets to him. We're going to build a tower. In fact, this is, we as people, we have a tendency always to reach in first. The story of Babel shows us that people reach in, meaning that it's about us. We like stories that are about us. They say, listen, we're going to make a name for ourselves. We're going to make a name for ourselves. How are we going to do that? We're going to gather people around us that are just like us, that speak our language, that do our thing. The interesting thing is what God told Noah and what God told Adam in the beginning is, I want you to fill the earth. This is my plan. I want you to fill the earth. They said, no, we don't want to fill the earth. We want to meet in a city and live together and do our own thing. Nothing wrong with city life, but the problem is that they had chosen here that we're going to be about us, around us. It's all me. We tend to look in. And then people, when they come together, they tend to reach up, meaning that they build their own bridges. They come up with their own ways. They come up with their own strategies. They think, you know, if I build a ladder high enough, if I create a room nice enough, God has to do what I want him to do. And we create our own stairs, our own ladders, our own stairway to heaven. That's what's going on here. These people said, we're going to build a tower, we're going to put a temple by it, and our God has to live in that room, and he's going to come to us anytime we want him on our terms, our way. We reach in, we gather people around us who are just like us, we reach up, we try to build our own stairway. And that's the story here. That's what's going on. And the interesting thing is, as you read it, listen to what happens. Chapter 11, verse 5. It says, and the Lord came down to see their city, and the tower which the children of man had built. Now, as you read that, you think, God came down? What does that mean? This is, it's a story. Okay, remember this. Stories use different types of literary devices. This is irony, okay? You're supposed to read this and chuckle. They are building this tower because they're going to create a room where God has to stay, and God is up in heaven going, what are they doing? Hold on, we got to come down. Where are they? Oh, yeah, they're the, what are they? I can't even see that tower. Where, what is it they're doing? It is really all tongue-in-cheek. God is, the story is almost making fun of them, say, okay, we build a tower, God's got to come, right? No, God's in heaven going, you're doing what? You're going to build a tower to where? I can't even see this thing. You got to be kidding me. And he goes on to say in verse 6, he says, and the Lord said, behold, they are one people and they have all one language. And this is the only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, so they may not understand one another's speech. And the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of the whole earth. They left off the building and the city. Therefore, the name of the city is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of them all. And from there, the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. Now look at verse 4 again. Look at their fear. We want to do this lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Look at what happened to them. Verse 9, the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. Listen, this is the story. The story is that we as people who have issues, who are messed up, have this tendency to look in. We gather people around us. We justify ourselves. We create a name for me. And then as we gather people around us that are just like us, we build our own little stairway to heaven, our own little path that says God has to come dwell in the way. He has to be just like I want him to be. I'm going to make God in my image. In our image, we're going to create God. He has to do what we want him to do, and we're going to build a stairway that gets to him, and God has to hang out and be like us. And every time we do that, God confuses that. God messes it over. We like this nice, neat, cookie cutter spirituality where everything fits in a mold. But often that cookie cutter spirituality ends up trying to make people look just like us and act just like us and be just like us. And we wrestle when people aren't. We don't know what to do with it. I remember I was doing youth ministry, and this kid got saved. I mean, he met Jesus. God just like, God is life, you know. And we were at this camp, and so, you know, I have all the adults in the room and all the youth, and we're going to do this service, and I want this kid to come up and share a little bit about what happened. Now, this kid came from a rough background. He didn't have the neatest language, and he got up on stage, and this is for real. He got up and went, God is effing awesome. And you know, he didn't say effing. He used the F dash dash, the queen mother of all curse words, you know, the one. And I'm in a crowd going, oh, no. And I can see other people going, oh, but that's all he knew. And instead of being really excited about what God had done in his life, that whole room turned into, how dare he? Now, should he use that language? No, but he didn't know any better. And it was incredible that God was working his life, and this kid was willing to stand up on stage and say, listen, something's happening inside of me. I don't get it yet, but it's good. We like this nice, neat little cookie cutter. People just like us, who act just like us, who talk just like us. And you may be here this morning, and you may be, you know, a person who's from a church background, and you wrestle with this. We're going to look at some words in just a minute that fit some of the molds that people want to fit everybody in. And you may be here, and I want to tell you, we don't want Genesis to be a place like that. We want Genesis to be a place where somebody stands up and says, that's effing awesome, and we may go, oh, that's probably not the right place, but we lovingly put our arm around them and help them find out what it means to follow Jesus after that, not put them down. I was in church one day, and this teenager walked into our church for the first time. He was wearing a hat. And this guy walked up to me. This kid had never been in church in his life. This guy walked up to me and looked at me and said, you need to go take care of that. And I was like, take care of what? That young man cannot wear a hat in this building. I went, wow, are you serious, man? He's here. This is the first time this kid's ever shown up to church, and the big message we have is, hey, don't wear a hat. But see, gather people around us who are just like us, build our own stairway. It's not what we want for Genesis. It's not what I want for Genesis. And if that's what you want at church, it's probably in a place to be. Stage one of Genesis Church was get ourselves off the ground. Stage two is we are going to be a missional church that is crazy about going into our community and neighborhood and telling people about Jesus. That's the journey of Genesis. And that's what God warns against. And in fact, the people of Israel didn't get this story. God's people decided they were going to be nice, neat little Jews living their country, and everybody else around them, they're just weird, they're different from us, they're Gentiles, hideous, bad people. We don't associate with them. They can't eat in our house. We're not going to eat with them. We're not going to touch them. We're not going to see them. They can live out there in the desert somewhere. Just don't have anything to do with us. We're going to build our temple in such a way that they can't even get through the front door. That's who we are. But we as Christians, if you're a person of faith, we do the same thing. But that's not God. God is ascending God. And so this morning, I just want to challenge you. I hope in these words that I'm going to do really fast, because I'm going to share with you some words that I think capsulize some of the stairways that both people of faith and people who are searching for God use, where they gather people around them that are just like them, and they build their nice little stairway to say, this is how I get to God. They reach in, they reach up. And I hope you will find yourself in at least one or two of these words. And as you find yourself, first of all, go to God and say, my stairway doesn't work. I get it. And second of all, realize that you have a tendency to gather people around you that are just like you, that fit in your mold, and you're uncomfortable around people who aren't. And I hope that our church is filled with people from all these paths. Now, here's the deal. Nothing I'm going to say in these words is bad in and of itself. One of the words is spirituality. It's good to be spiritual. It's good to be somebody who seeks after God with this emotional passion. Where it becomes bad is when I say, I'm going to find people and gather people around me who are just like me, and then my spirituality becomes my stairway to heaven. You understand? So here's the words. Here's nine words that we're going to look at that really deal with this. And the first word is this, the word accomplishment. The word accomplishment. One of the ways that people build their stairway to heaven is through accomplishment, things that I do, whether it's wealth or whether it's good works. You see this in a high school. You come, if you were to come hang around this school for a period of months starting in September, you would see this. You would see teenagers who gather people around them that are just like them in the area of accomplishment. So you have people who are jocks, you know. The jocks hang out. The football team hangs out, and, you know, they're cool. They eat in the lunchroom together. They grunt a lot, and, you know, they eat with their hands and just shove it in, and it goes everywhere, and it is, I play football. You know, and then you have the people who are getting, like, you know, they're in all the challenge classes, and they have, you know, a 4.78 GPA, and nobody really understands them. You know, they've got the pocket protectors and the glasses, and they walk around, you know, hi, you know, how are you? And they gather, you know, they eat at a lunch table together, and, you know, people are shooting spit wads at them. They don't know what to do. And then you have the people who say, you know, drama. I'm a thespian. I'm really uncomfortable saying that word, by the way. I'm a thespian. And, you know, they sit around, they quote Shakespeare around their table. And what they do you see what I'm saying? They gather people around them based on their accomplishments, based on what they can do. This is how it works in the church. We end up saying, listen, I bring this to the table. And we gather people around us that are just like us. And so we go to churches that are full of people who have certain accomplishments. And we say, you know, if you don't have this level of status, this level of ability, you don't really fit in here. I actually was on staff at a church in central Missouri that was planted by First Baptist Church in the town. And there was a lot of debate why First Baptist planted it, but I am thoroughly convinced of this. First Baptist Church was the church where the uppity people went. And they chose to plant a church because they didn't really want the people across the railroad tracks coming to their church. Let's gather people around us who have accomplishments like us. They wear $350 suits and drive nice cars and they have money. We need to plant a church across town where those other people can go. And then we bring our accomplishments, like God is up in heaven going, woohoo! You make a lot of money. Yeah, all right. That's the God we have. See, we create God in our image. Woohoo! You are a person who is well-to-do. You're a person who's a good athlete. God, I give you my football playing. And God's going, wow, I never had a good football player before. All right. We create God in our image. We create a tower. See? Another word that some people do is the word moralism. The word moralism. Some of us have a tendency to define what it means to be a person of faith by the things I do and I don't do. I don't drink, I don't chew, I don't date girls who do, you know, I keep the list. I'm a good moral person. Yeah, I've got some things in my closet that you don't know about, but the really big stuff, I don't do those things. Woohoo! Jesus encountered these people in the Bible. They're called Pharisees in the Bible. Pharisees were these people who made all these rules and all these laws of what it looked like to be spiritual. And they said, if you keep all these rules, all these laws, you're a good person. And so instead of reaching out to the world around them, they would walk up to a person who was begging on the street and really just kick dirt on them. They would deal with a person who was a prostitute and they just wanted to kill her. They wanted to gather, but boy, they gathered a bunch of people like them around them who could sit around and talk about all the rules of what it meant to be religious. And they were really good at that. And Jesus speaking to them, I want you to see what Jesus says to them up here. How terrible for you teachers of the law and Pharisees. You are hypocrites. Now, why does he say they're hypocrites? Because these same guys who had these rules, it is written in a lot of their history that they had written in ways that they could molest children and get away with it theologically. They were a mess on the inside, but they had said, let's gather people around us who are good, upstanding, right people. And by keeping the rules, we build our stairway to heaven. You clean the outside of your cup and plate while the inside is full of what you have obtained by violence and selfishness. Blind Pharisee, clean what's inside the cup first, then the outside will be clean too. How terrible for you teachers of the law and Pharisees. You hypocrites, you are like whitewashed tombs, which look fine on the outside but are full of bones and decaying corpses on the inside. Pretty harsh words. Now I'm gonna be real honest with you. I tend to be like this. Little stairway I tend to build is the one of moralism. And it comes out a lot of ways, and I've got to really wrestle with it, and God is really, like, messing with my world in this area. I came from a background where there wasn't a lot of alcohol, and it was kind of looked down on, and you don't drink, and, you know, that's just a bad thing. And I've started hanging out with people that, you know, they're, like, okay with it. And I still, part of me, and I'm shooting straight, part of me wants a cold beer, and part of me wants to look down on the people who have a cold beer. It's like this weird tension on the inside of me, because I'm thinking, if I just don't drink, I got to be okay with God, right? And the best way to do it is just gather around people who go, listen, that's not the issue. The issue is Jesus. But I have a bent towards moralism. That's what I'm trying to tell you. We got one of these, you got to find yourself in one of these words and realize this is kind of like me. Some of you are here going, I'm not a moralist at all. Woohoo! Let it rip. Yeah! You know, and I'm going to feel tension around you. And it's healthy for me to feel that tension, and I need to hang out with you. I need to let you into my circle. But more than that, the world looks at the Christian faith and is determined that this is all we are. We're just a bunch of moralists who live by a set of rules. That is not Christianity. That's the Tower of Babel is what it is. I build my little city, grab people around me that are just like me, and I build my stairway, and I end up with a God who's up in heaven going, all right, he kept that one, check. Kept that one, check. God is just a big, huge accountant who's keeping a tab on how well we keep the list. And that's not the God of the Bible. And that's not the people of the Bible. A third word, here you go. How about the word spirituality? Now, these people tend to be on the other end. These are the people where if they could have their way, okay, they would go sit on the top of a mountain and just, like, vibrate. You know, there's Christian spirituality. I sit on top of a mountain, I vibrate with the Bible in my lap. You know, these are people who just, you know, they like the spiritual, the emotional spirituality of praying, of being deep with God, of having the great things. I don't know if you realize it, but statistics, studies show that America is the most spiritual it has ever been and the least Christian. People are looking for spirituality. They're just not looking to us to find it. And this is what I hope Genesis will do. I will hope Genesis will look to people who are spiritual and say, you're seeking for something. We have the answer, and it's not a set of rules. It's a God who's just bigger than anything I can explain to you. But see, sometimes these people will gather. You know, a lot of times they'll end up in communes, or they'll end up with, you know, these situations where they just hang out with groups of people, and they gather people around them that are just like them, and they end up with a God who's kind of a hippie in the heavens who's like, whoa, dude, yeah, deep stuff, you know? And we create a God in our image. Gather people around us, build our own stairway, build our own ladder. Another word is the word family. Family's a good thing, but I want to tell you there's a lot of people. We live in a community where there are a lot of people who worship at the altar of family, what they'd confessional. But unlike a lot of people, Martin, you know, a lot of people walk in and say, you know, I'm in a confessional, I've sinned, and I need forgiveness. Martin Luther would go in there for 4 to 8 hours a day. He was wearing the other priests in the monastery he was in just completely out. But he would leave the confessional after spending sometimes 8 hours confessing all his sins every day. How much, you know, do you have 8 hours worth of stuff to tell somebody that you did yesterday? But he would leave and he would think, oh my gosh, I forgot this one bad thought. I forgot this one bad, I was out there with brother so-and-so and he said something weird and I just kind of thought in my mind, oh, you're a goober. I didn't confess that. I might go to hell tomorrow. I'm in trouble. And he lived with this incredible guilt because he began to realize that the duty of doing faith did not fill. And you may be a person here, and your religious experience is, if I just do the religious stuff, if I could say, I pray a lot, I read the Bible, I do the religious thing. We gather people around us who are just like us. And so we have Bible studies where we can just sit around and be deep thinking about the great things of God. It's a good thing. Unless I turn that into the sum total of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And I build my stairway. Duty. How about this word? How about the word politics? This is a big one. We turn God into a giant Republican. You know, we do. My son, Andy, when he was probably about 2 years old, was when George Bush, the senior, lost to Bill Clinton. We had a lot of fun with it because we taught him to go around as two years old going, don't blame me, I voted for Bush, you know, and we thought it was funny. It was really hilarious for this two-year-old to walk around doing that. But the thing is that in the midst of that, we have turned God into like this political thing where God is most confessional. But unlike a lot of people, Martin, you know, a lot of people walk in and say, you know, I'm in the confessional, I've sinned, and I need forgiveness. Martin Luther would go in there for 4 to 8 hours a day. He was wearing the other priests in the monastery he was in just completely out. But he would leave the confessional after spending sometimes 8 hours confessing all his sins every day. How much, you know, do you have 8 hours worth of stuff to tell somebody that you did yesterday? But he would leave and he would think, oh my gosh, I forgot this one bad thought. I forgot this one bad, I was out there with brother so-and-so and he said something weird and I just kind of thought in my mind, oh, you're a goober. I didn't confess that. I might go to hell tomorrow. I'm in trouble. And he lived with this incredible guilt because he began to realize that the duty of doing faith did not fill. And you may be a person here, and your religious experience is, if I just do the religious stuff, if I could say, I pray a lot, I read the Bible, I do the religious thing. We gather people around us who are just like us. And so we have Bible studies where we can just sit around and be deep thinking about the great things of God. It's a good thing. Unless I turn that into the sum total of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And I build my stairway. Duty. How about this word? How about the word politics? This is a big one. We turn God into a giant Republican. You know, we do. My son, Andy, when he was probably about 2 years old, was when George Bush, the senior, lost to Bill Clinton. We had a lot of fun with it because we taught him to go around as two years old going, don't blame me, I voted for Bush, you know, and we thought it was funny. It was really hilarious for this two-year-old to walk around doing that. But the thing is that in the midst of that, we have turned God into like this political thing where God is most, the thing he's most excited about are the political issues of the day, you know. And what we do is we gather people around us who vote like us. You know, if you're a Democrat, you're not really welcome here. If you're a Republican, I mean, how dare you vote for things, you know, that are against social justice? And we decide the political issues that God is most for. I saw this happen in church just real recently with this immigration issue. As somebody in a church used the email forum in that church to send out an email dealing with this immigration issue, which, to be honest with you, I don't know enough about it, but I will tell you this, I don't think there's a biblical mandate about that issue either way. I think that's an issue that has a lot of ramifications both ways. But he sent out this email through the church e-group that came from this position. And it deeply hurt and offended people in the same church who were Hispanic, who had family in this country, who were way over here on this position. And we turned God into a giant Republican or a giant Democrat who, what he's all about is voting for the right issues. That's my stairway. And God will confuse it. It's not going to work. How about this word? The word charity. I've got to be spiritual. I give a lot to people who are hurting. I give a lot of money to the church. And, you know, when somebody's on the side of the street and they're holding up a sign and said, we'll work for food, I just, my heart breaks for them. I always give them money. And, you know, I don't know what they spend it on. And, you know, I go down and work at the soup kitchen and I serve people meals that... That's all fantastic, unless the sum of my spirituality is grabbing people around me who are just like me, building my stairway. Charity, that's another stairway. And we have a God who's up in heaven who's just always, you know, just all he does is cry over the plight of humanity. Instead of actually doing something and getting involved, we end up creating a God in our image. A couple more real quick and I'll be done with this. Beliefs. I end up with my system of beliefs. I believe all the right things. I read the doctrinal statement. I'm in. Hold on. You want those beliefs to change me? No. I'm not. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm in. Beliefs. I hold the right beliefs. I was at a conference one time, and this guy walked up to a friend of mine and was talking about this doctrinal issue that's out there. I won't tell you what the doctrinal issue is. Just something that Christians kind of like to debate and discuss sometimes about who God is and who people are. And he walked up and he looked at this friend of mine and he said, are you with us? Meaning, we're going to get all the people who agree on this issue in one little camp, and we're going to like stand up and go, woohoo, we are this. We're going to label ourselves, we are this. And maybe one of the struggles you have is that you're like, okay, I don't even know what to believe. And why I feel so awkward in the church, it's because I feel like everybody's on the inside and they all speak the same language. They say all the right things. They got it all figured out. I don't. So I don't fit in here. And when we do that and we build our little tower, says we believe the right things, get people around us who believe the same stuff too, got to sign the initiation rites, and woohoo. That's Babel. Last one, reason. These are people who decide that it's through what I learn, the intellect, figuring stuff out, being smart, being wise. If I can just be somebody who has everything figured out and really read a lot of books and study a lot, and I'm going to get a bunch of people around. We're going to talk about things that are really way up here in the clouds. Nobody understands them but us. And that's the type of people I gather around myself. Jesus said this about people who think wisdom is the answer. He said, where's the wise man? Where's the scholar? Where's the philosopher of this age? Has not God made the foolish the wisdom of the world? Since God, in his wisdom, in the wisdom of the world, made foolish the wisdom of the world. For since in this wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. That means if you feel like your way to heaven is through how much you know, God's going to confuse that just like he did Babel. See, that's the story. The story is these people came together, said, let's get a bunch of people around us who are just like us. Let's build a city. As we build a city, let's build a temple. Let's build a tower. We'll all be just alike. We speak the same language. We do the same things. Let's build our tower up to the heavens. And God looks down from heaven and says, no, it's not going to work. I'm going to confuse it. I'm going to send you in dismay, and I'm going to scatter you over the earth. I'm going to accomplish my plan. I'm going to do what I chose to do. And he confuses their speech. He confuses their language and makes it where their plan to build a tower to the heavens doesn't happen. You may be a person who isn't a follower of Jesus, and you're building your own towers. This list is not comprehensive. It's not everything that's out there. I'm sure there are a lot of other ways. But I hope in maybe one or two of these you went, ooh, I'm like that. And if you're a person who's not a follower of Jesus, you need to bring that and lay it at his feet and say, listen, I have been trying my own way to get to you. I've got to trust you. But maybe you're a follower of Jesus in here, and what you need to hear this morning is, I am bent toward this. I have a tendency to build my tower like this. I have a tendency to follow. The way I think I get closer to Jesus is by keeping the rules. The way I think I get closer to Jesus is by having a great family. The way I think I get closer to Jesus is through duty. The way I think I get closer to Jesus is by going out and just being mystical. And just by doing that, I'm building my own stairway to heaven. I gather people around me who are just like me. I look at people who aren't just like me and go, they're weird. I don't really want to hang out with them. Don't want to be close to them. And we build a stairway to heaven. And God will confuse it every time. But there's always grace. And I want to tell you, not one word in the Bible is misplaced. Not one word. Now, here's the interesting thing I'm going to tell you. In chapter 10, the Bible gives us the lineage of Shem. No, not the fourth stooge, but Shem, the son of Noah. Look at verse 9 again, the end. And from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. He'd already given the generations of Shem, but look at verse 10. These are the generations of Shem. And he does it again. It's really a weird thing. But there's not one word wasted in the Bible. And here's what's going on. This story, these people, these whacked out people who thought they could build a stairway to heaven, and God confuses them. But then the Bible says, but there's a guy named Shem. And a Hebrew person who would read that gets it. Because what are Hebrew people are called Semites. Where do we get that name? From the name Shem. And this is what's going on. God is telling us that even though these people built this tower, they created God in their own image, and they were kind of following their own ways of gathering people, God was always at work raising up a people that he would work through. And one of the great, 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 great grandsons of Shem is a guy named Abram. And God is going to speak to the heart of Abram. He's going to call him out. Abraham is going to follow God, be a person of faith. And through Abram, God is going to change his name to Abraham, and he is going to become a man who leads a great nation. That great nation becomes the Hebrews. Through that great nation, God is going to send his son, Jesus Christ. And Jesus is going to be born. Many, many years later, Jesus is going to be born. He's going to live on this earth for 30 years. He's going to die on the cross, and he's going to do the exact opposite. God always does the exact opposite of what we do. Listen, when we tend to reach in, when we tend to gather people around us, God reaches out. God steps out of heaven, and when we tend to reach up thinking we can build a stairway to heaven, God confuses it. But God comes from heaven and reaches down to us. That's the gospel. The gospel is that we can't reach up. We're never going to gather people around us to fulfill our heart, but God is going to step out of heaven. He's going to send his son Jesus through the line of Shem. And that son is going to change people's life, and God is going to reach down from heaven when we can't reach up. He's going to reach out. He is always going to be ascending God. He is always going to be a God who sends his people out with a message, and he sent his only son, Jesus, for you and for me. Whatever stairway you've built, listen, let God wreck it. Let God just destroy it. Let God confuse it. And then look to the God who sent his only son, who reached down from heaven for you and for me, and who reaches out to make a difference in our lives. And then Genesis. If you're part of Genesis, I want you to hear this very clearly. That's who we are to be. We are going to have a tendency to gather people around us that are just like us. All of us are like this. We're like this, I'm telling you. And we're going to end up little holy huddles and eventually, if we're not careful, we're going to have people who are hurting, who need Jesus, who, if they got saved, would stand on a platform and say, Jesus is effing awesome. And we're going to put barriers up and walls to say, listen, you don't fit in here. And God is always ascending God. If the sum total of our existence as a church is the fact that once a week we gather, and a few times a month here and there we gather in homes, and we just get people who are like us around us, we're just like Babel. But if we'll be a church who responds like Jesus and reaches out. And when I say reaches down, I mean we take the message that God has given us that Jesus came and take it outside the walls of wherever we meet. Then we're living the gospel. And that's my challenge today. It's a challenge of the story of Babel. We have a response. The first thing I want to challenge you to do is once again, you know, if you took notes, great. If not, just look at the list that was up here. Think of the list that was up here earlier and ask yourself, where do I tend to build a stairway? And wherever that is, just take that to God this morning and say, only the gospel, only the fact that Jesus died for me, that's the only thing that counts. And I offer that to you this morning. As we do that, we're going to respond by having a time of worship. We're going to be singing. We're going to invite you to stand, kneel, sit. You may choose just to sit and pray. And if that's what God leads you to do, that's great. If you want to stand, if you want to raise your hands, however you feel comfortable worshiping. Worship is an issue of the heart, though. Make sure you lift your heart to the God who reached down and reaches out. And you do that. As we're worshiping, we're going to be passing offering. Offering is a way for those who are part of Genesis, who are part of our church, to say, God, we love you, and we're giving back to you. If you're not part of Genesis this morning, we don't want you or expect you to give. This is really for people who are part of our church family here. But that is one of the ways we respond to what God has said and what God has done, is by the act of giving and giving our tithes. Whatever it is, you respond to God, and you just come to him this morning and worship the God who reaches down, reaches out. Jesus, we love you, we praise you, we thank you for the morning. We thank you for how you've spoken to us. We thank you for this story. What a great picture of how we tend to be reaching in and reaching up, but also a great picture of who you are reaching down and reaching out. Let us trust in that today. In your name I pray, amen.